Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Maricar Hernandez, the CEO and co-owner of Go Beyond Limits Outsourcing Solutions. Maricar is a passionate leader with a mission to bring out the best in her team, ensuring exceptional results for clients and employees alike. With over 22 years in the BPO industry, she founded Beyond Limits BPO to create a value-driven company that prioritizes long-term employment and quality services. I've asked her to join us here today to share her story and how to lead with trust, integrity, and a thirst for learning. So Maricar, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Dario?
I am good. Yeah, glad to have you here. So I always like to ask, how did you even get into this? Business process outsourcing is a niche thing. Not an engineer, it's not a nurse, it's not a doctor. How did you get into this? Is this sort of the field that your family were in? Were your parents in business?
No, my course is communication arts from De La Salle University. But then my first job, I used to work in America Online as a call center agent. But actually, we're more on back office. We do emails. And it's the first job. Being an employee of AOL or working for AOL, I really enjoyed it. We're not working, but at the same time, there's a self-development, soft skills being learned, and you're earning. You're
right.
Receiving your salary. But it's cool. And when people ask me, my classmates will ask me, what are you working? What's your job? Where are you now? I'm telling them AOL, but my job, we're chatting, we're sending emails to AOL members. It is a cool job. I really enjoyed it. And then AOL then was bought by another company, Telecare, and then another company also purchased it, so that I stayed in the company until it became one of the biggest BPO. And there was a retrenchment because I need to step down. They need to move me out of the company. So what happened is I applied. I was thinking at that time, Dario, should I still stay in the BPO industry? Because will it be an advantage or disadvantage for me? Because this is the only industry I know. This is for, I think that was 13 years then that I've been working in the same industry. So I applied for two companies are trying to get me then that I applied for here in Clark, our office in Clark Air Base in Pampanga, Philippines. One is a manufacturing company. They're hiring me as their executive assistant. Well, the other one is also a startup company. They're planning to put up an outsourcing company as well. But then they're both Americans. The bosses are Americans. So I'll be the one doing all the legwork, establishing the company and all those things, hiring people, finding office space. So what happened is I asked my husband then, who's into business, because my husband has his own trucking and trading companies. So I asked him, do you think I should stay on this industry or move my comfort zone to another company? And then he said, it's up to you. So I weigh my options and I decided to go with a startup company, though it'll be a lot of work. However, maybe because from AOL, I started as an agent, sending emails, doing chat, and I move up the corporate ladder, being a team leader, and then I move from operations to corporate HR, and I work with executives of the different BPO companies because of that position. I became more confident I can do it, establishing the startup company. Yeah, so there. And then somebody asked me, why don't you just start your own company? Anyways, you already know the ins and outs.
Right.
So when I resigned from that company, the startup company, I helped the bosses establish it for 4 years. And then 4 to 5 years, I stayed there. And I was the first employee. And then I told myself, I'll just have my own. Let's see if it will work. If not, there's no loss for me because I gained experiences. And then I also told my husband, what if I fail? And then he said, maybe because he's the business person, he said, what if you succeed? Yeah. What if you succeed?
Good husband.
And that's why I was the co-owner because I partnered with him.
I love
he's
that.
He's my partner.
That. And your story is really good in the sense of you did the work first. You learned to love it. You learned the technical part, which was the doing of the task, typically. And then you learned the business side of it, helping with the other startup. And then that let you launch and do your own. Now, were you fully prepared for everything once you launched on your own, or were there still Yeah, what were some of the biggest challenges when you finally?
Yeah, good question. Because there also came a time that I was asking myself, Daryl, and also praying, is this really something for me? Do you really want me to be here? But then eventually it will. And then my husband, maybe because he's my rock, he's the one telling me that that's business. There are lean months. There are times that you will, there are some rejections from proposals that you're sending, and some clients will not be paying on time, but you have to pay the employee's salary on time. So you have to find ways and to be more resilient. Yeah, but there are a lot of humps along the way. And maybe because we're now, we'll be celebrating our fifth anniversary this month. Thank you. So yeah, I was even thinking that time we started with four employees then. Four employees, now we are running into 80. And I was like, when we still only have 15 employees at that time, I was thinking maybe we just have a few employees. More or less, I can just, if I got tired or if I think this is not for me, I can easily close the company.
Right.
However, my husband, no, don't give up. He was the one helping me, even talking to clients. So maybe it's a good partnership in a sense that my background is more of operations and HR, and he is into sales and client relationship management. That's how it works for us. Mm. Yeah.
I heard that in a typical business, you always need three people. You need an operations finance person, a marketing and sales person, and a product person. And everybody has to excel. The product person has to excel in maintaining quality and innovation. The marketing and sales has to keep people come through the door. If a tree falls in the woods and no one's there, does it make a sound? If you have the world's greatest product or service and nobody knows,
yes,
help anybody and make any money. So you need marketing and sales. And then of course the operations and finance. There's a lot of companies that grow too fast. They fall apart. Enron was a company, they posted $101 billion profit the year before they filed for bankruptcy. So you need an operations and finance person, right?
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
you gotta
yes.
have that in place. So that sounds like you guys have figured out a way to share those hats in a way that works for you.
Yeah, so with the finance, yeah, that's something that personally, then, before I started the company, I wasn't really good in handling money. But then since my husband is into sales, so he was the one guiding me. Yeah, so you're correct because you have to make sure that you still have money to run for the business, right? And when you run out of money, that's the business will die. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The cash is king. That's, I think that's a really important lesson for a lot of people. You can have a lot of assets, you can have a lot of proposals in the air, but at the end of the day, cash is king. And
is,
I think, especially coming out of COVID, it's become more important than people previously realized to have really strong runways. And a runway is your financial runway. It means how many months, if everything stopped, if cash stopped coming through the door, how many months could you maintain operations? That's your runway.
Yeah.
You've got a 1 month runway, a 2 month runway, a 5 month runway. And I just love what you talked about before, you weren't good with money until you start having a business. It forces you because now you have 80 families.
Yeah. Yes. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Even so, well, in the Philippines, we don't count it as employee, but families.
So even at any business, those are people that depend on you. And then if you even want to get crazier, there's the 80 staff you have, but then there's all the clients that you have and their customers that you help them serve. So it's really, it's at the end of the day, it's almost thousands of people that depend on you being able to perform and show up and everybody being able to bring their best every day. So I think that's a really powerful lesson. What would you recommend to someone who's starting out or struggling in launching their business?
Maybe you have to know first the industry you're getting into. We started also other business outside Beyond Limits, but it didn't work. Maybe because that's not our expertise. And then also at the same time, you have to establish really relationships with your employees, with your clients. For me, my personal mantra is I don't have to impress anyone but my employees and my clients. Especially clients. Yeah, those are the only people that I have to impress. I have to inspire. And then third is you have to be really resilient. And there are times that you will be challenged, but you have to be optimistic. Because, yeah, when we started, I told my husband, what if I fail? What if I succeed? That thing already, he's already positive without knowing what will happen next. And I think we're really tested. You mentioned about the pandemic because we started the company in 2019. 2019, and then came pandemic. Yes. And the first company anniversary party we had is actually online. because we cannot celebrate it. However, at that time, Daryl, surprisingly, while everybody's being anxious about the pandemic, losing businesses and losing jobs, I was more positive because I was thinking that it's a perfect time because people need to outsource because they cannot go to the office. And yeah, to be honest, that's the time that our business and our headcount went up. There's an influx of employees at that time and more clients came in because they need to just outsource the work, the back office.
Right.
Yeah, I think it helped as well, being positive at all times, yeah, in the business. The first day, the first thing that you have to do when you wake up is really think it will be a positive day. It will maybe a bad one, but at the end of the day, you will still find something good in it.
I think that's a good message. Obviously, there's an element of timing, right? Success is when will and preparation meets timing. I think I've heard that said somewhere. So I think that's a part of it. But I think in some ways, the pandemic was good to a certain extent. Not, there was a lot of bad, and there's lots of bad coming out now that was hidden and previously. Conspiracy theorists are 20 and 0. They're 20 for 20 so far, it sounds like, with all sorts of new news dropping. But I think in some ways, what it is expedited the meritocracy. What I mean by that is sometimes people got paid a certain amount because of where they lived or blah, 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 blah. But now when people were living in the same city, but different parts of the city and all meeting on Zoom, it doesn't matter to me if you're in my city or not. I need the best person for the job. It doesn't matter if we're all meeting on Zoom at the same time. So what does it matter if you're across the city, a 30-hour drive for me or a 4-hour drive for me? Yeah. And so all of a sudden the question of merit really comes up. And also, I think it forced a lot of business owners to also to think in terms of systems and processes for their business, because they lose that. And it was a growing pain, but they lost that ability to be in person. And a lot of the little mini trainings, the micro trainings that happen just by hanging out together, those disappear. And so all of a sudden you have all these fires happening due to a lack of process and training for staff. And I think that in some ways, like I said, the meritocracy push was a big benefit, I think, just for end users, consumers. I know some people might be upset about local jobs.
Yeah.
I think overall, if we're talking about serving people, which is the market, I think they won. And then for businesses, I think it forced them to be smarter in setting up their systems. How is it for you? I guess I'm asking a leading question, but how is it for you? It sounds like you, in that the last year, the years of the pandemic, you were growing, but you were also having to train people and you couldn't do it in person. What was that like?
It's really challenging for everyone, even for our managers. However, we first make sure the security. So you mentioned, because it's, I was also thinking, what if there will be another pandemic? Hopefully none, but it will attack the internet instead because we're able to go on with our lives, right? Because of we can order online and then we can do the, for us. That's why we really heavily invested in data security and privacy. We have the audits, and at the same time, we hired somebody from to Samsung Singapore for our IT security manager to make sure that all our data are secured. And for in terms of training, we have our job aides, because that's what we're doing for clients. We commit that they will only do internal training, and then once there are some employee turnovers or there is a ramp up in their headcount in Beyond Limits, we will be taking care of it. I think we have more systematic training processes and also job aids for everyone. It's easy. And we just really invested in technology at the same time, data security. Yeah, it goes hand in hand, I believe. So yeah, the technology is really essential, especially in our type of business.
And so what are some of the specific skills and behaviors that you think are important for your staff to improve or develop in order to be prepared for the way the world is evolving?
Yeah, good question. Number one is being flexible, because we are more of a KPOs actually, because we have accountants, we have engineers, we have architects. Those are the people we are hiring. People in escrow and title, real estate, property management. So they have to be flexible, because there will be times that this client or this company may end that kind of services or may not be needing that role. So you have to be flexible. So we do cross-training in each department to make them more flexible. At the same time, problem solver, because there are times, because of the time difference, though we are following the client's request or requirement for the shift schedule because of the time zones, but there are times that they have to work it on their own. So they need to be problem solver and having the initiative. And lastly, maybe asking questions. especially if they don't assume, especially they're working remotely. Like, for example, there's no communication, very limited communication.
Right.
So you have to always ask questions. And there are times that the clients, they will not know that you still have extra time. That's why I'm telling them that Filipinos work very fast and they are easy to learn. You have to give them more tasks. And then the clients are telling me that I cannot see them. So I don't know if there's still available time. So that's when communication should be very important for everyone. Yeah.
I think that's a really good idea. Something that's worked for me is something we call three key metrics.
Oh,
so I saw this in a company. They went from 0 to 100 million. And one of the things that they had in all departments for all staff were three key metrics. And so these were three things that 10 out of 10 in all three described world-class at that role, at that whatever. And in the weekly one-on-ones, either by department or individual, the supervisor or manager would give them a score, and they would give themselves a score. And if there was a difference, they would talk about it and maybe go with the middle number and put that in. And that allowed people to identify gaps and necessities. And I've seen people do four key metrics, or I think five might start getting too much, but three or four is probably a good number for that. And that really helps with one thing is, what's your workload? How active were you today? Like, one of those can be, I forget how is it phrased, but it was like green, yellow, red. And if people are too green all the time, that's not a good thing. You're supposed to rest after work, not at work. You're not a robot, so you don't want to be redlining.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you don't want to be, the client wants to know that they're getting value. And you might be green and thinking this is great, but they might be thinking I'm paying this person too much and they're not doing enough. So a simple measurement would be just like, what's my workload right now? And that's just an example of an example metric maybe. So I think that's a really important one, that intercommunication with people. What are some of the habits that you've noticed amongst the most successful companies you've worked with in terms of outsourcing and working with them?
First is transparency, being transparent, especially as I mentioned, you don't see them, they work remotely for you, and the client and our employees here. Second is being reliability. You have to make sure that you're being reliable, because each time that the client will need you, they're also, because clients know that you are reliable, there are some other work or jobs that the client is willing to give to you because they know you can deliver. And at the same time, lastly is quality. That's why for us in Beyond Limits, we value the top three are integrity, reliability, and quality. Because there are a lot of BPO companies, right? Everywhere, even mom and pop kind of BPO companies. However, I believe those three will differentiate Beyond Limits because of our transparency. Clients cannot see the employees that they can work for other clients. But no, I commit to the clients that they will be dedicated to you. So even though they have extra hours, like 3-4 hours in a day, they're not working, but they're for you. So anytime that you need help, they're there. Second is reliability. So anytime that they need me or even the employees, we're there. I got one feedback actually last week with a new client, and that's what he said, that he's really confident being our client because of the reliability. So anytime, it doesn't matter what time. So he cannot feel that I'm in the Philippines and this is my time zone, because he knows that you are there anytime. And the quality of work, because we do internal quality check of our work. As you mentioned, we also have key metrics and we have business scorecards for employees to follow. And these practices all came from AOL, when I work in AOL, because we have this goal align, wherein the company goes down to the CEO, down to the rank and file level. They have the goals aligned to the company. So anything that you're doing that is not aligned to that goals, they don't mean anything. That's how AOL taught us. And then also for the business scorecards, we do it quarterly. As you mentioned, that we have key metrics. And we do quarterly business. We will do, this year we'll be implementing quarterly business reviews as well with clients and sending them what we have accomplished, making them feel that we mean business. We just don't get remittances for payments and that's it. So no, we want to make sure we are partners. We actually don't call them clients, but more on partners. Yeah.
I love that. So let me say this again. So you've got big goals and those get broken into quarterly goals. that then turn into monthly, weekly tasks and objectives, projects for the frontline staff.
Yeah. So this is the company goal. Like for this year, we have also some taglines to make it more, the employees can easily remember it, like more in 2024. And then more is more connections, more push with the marketing. Mm-hmm. And then how can each individual contribute to those company goals? So let's start with the CEO. As a CEO, what will I be doing to contribute to these goals? And then as a manager, what will be your contributions? Up to the rank and file. And then quarterly, we review it. So where are we now? Are you doing these projects, these initiatives to make sure you contribute to the goals of the company? So that's what we are driving at.
Yeah, I love that. To keep everyone aligned. I think that's really, really important. Especially as companies grow, they tend to get fatter. You get a lot of staff that you hire for temporary things that then come on for a permanent thing. And then they're hanging out collecting pay, but they're not really helping produce the result that the company is thriving on. And I think that's part of why some of these companies end up doing mass layoffs. It's because they've accumulated a lot of people, but not everyone is aligned. And even if they are aligned, not everybody's actually generating a result. As you all know, as a business owner, you could do a lot of activity and not get any results, right? So
Yes. And also there, we also observe that employees are more engaged if they know what are the goals, what are we driving at? And they are also more engaged if they know that they can contribute to the goals. They have a sense of belongingness, at the same time, sense of accomplishment on their own, if they know they can contribute to the goals of the company. So it's like they're treating the company as if it's their own.
I love that. I love that. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see your clients or other entrepreneurs making?
One is, somebody told me before, if you are, even in other relationship, be it romantic relationship, friendship, if you have that, if you both don't have same values, I think it will not work. So I got one client before. So since it's a client, it was also referred to us. He's not really employee-centric. So it's more of business. Burnout, as you mentioned, if it's all green, it's not good as well for the key metrics, right? Meaning to say the employee got burned out, and then, but then the client, more or less, we have arguments. So it ended. I have to end it. I have to tell them I have to end it because I have to take care, because I'm more of the employee side. So yeah. And then another mistake maybe is if we are not into caregiving, if we are in terms of pricing, we have to create pricing based on our quality, not on our client's budget. Mm-hmm. Yes. For example, luxury brands like Gucci, Chanel, isn't it? They don't have their price because of their, we have to be afford the affordability, but it's more of the quality that they can give. Not because, I mean, if you cannot afford it, sorry, but somebody else will find it because of the quality and also the brand that you have. Mm-hmm. So we're not a cheap brand. At the same time, we're not also very expensive for our clients, but the quality itself and also how you brand it. As I mentioned, if you say beyond limits, I wanted something like for the client, oh, they're reliable. You can depend on them anytime. And just to share with you, we haven't done any heavy marketing initiatives or projects or campaigns yet, to be honest. 90% of our clients are referred. So we are, we grow because of client referrals. Mm. The first client that we have 5 years ago is still with us. He's now the biggest client that we have. And then he referred 4 or 5 clients to us already who are still with us. And they are good at paying, no issues with the employees' relationship with their clients or with this referred clients. I think going back to what you mentioned when we started, the long-term relationship, I think it's because at the beginning, that's what we want to happen, long-term relationships with vendors, with clients, and with employees.
I love that. I love that a lot. And I think that's really important because if your biggest competitive advantage is price, there's nothing stopping anybody else from coming in and charging less than you. And even if they're suicidal, even if they're going to lose money up front, they'll still be in business long enough to upset you because it's the only value that you offer. As opposed to, and for a lot of people, price is not the number one thing on the list. They're not price shoppers. So a lot of people, they'll pay a little bit more for better quality. It just depends on the value that they're getting. So I think that's really smart on your part. What do you see as the future? We've had a lot with technology. It's been relatively disruptive. There's a lot happening geopolitically in the world right now. What are some of the trends that you're watching down the line, the next 5, 10 years that you're keeping your eye on?
Yeah, good question. One of our, actually, he's an executive to a real estate company. And each time that he will be moving from one company to another, he's bringing us with him. So it's okay, I know these guys, I've been working with them, Ben Limits, they're good, so I wanted to start to try them. But he turned out actually a client turned friend now. But he mentioned to us about AI. So right now, if the process is, especially in escrow and title, if the process is just repetitive, and AI can, and then he told me, I know, Marika, you love people. You love to employ people. That's the first thing. But if you will look into the business side, you will see that it will be more, what you call this, you can earn more if you will be able to do the AI. But that's something that I'm still trying to contemplate. As a business person, I know I can say it's enough already, or I'm already good with this. It's just that maybe another is my passion in hiring people, knowing that they can send their brother or sisters to school. And just to share with you, we are also supporting an orphanage. So I know companies do CSRs, right? I think that's a requirement already for compliance.
Corporate
they do
social
it.
Responsibility.
Yes, yes. But then for us, when we started Beyond Limits, actually it's my form of therapy. After work, I go to grocery and buy stuff for this all-girls orphanage in Angeles City. Yeah, so these girls, they cannot be, according to the one managing them, they cannot be adopted anymore because their parents are still there. It's just that most of them are in jail, or they have some, they're inside jail, so they cannot be taken care of. That's why they're in that orphanage. So what I did is I just buy grocery items for them, for the girls. And our company driver will drop them off. That we did monthly. And then pandemic came. And I was telling my husband, it's pandemic and people can't help but to think of themselves first, right? So there are a lot of donations coming in aside from us. However, if there were these people donating, will be thinking for themselves, which you cannot blame them. They have to take care first of their families. So what will happen to the girls, to the orphanage? So we continue it. Until now, every month, our HR is requesting funds for the grocery items. So we still do it. Until now, yeah. Yeah, and
that.
Then, and also for the scholar, we have college scholars. We have a partner, public school, the purse of the poor, and those are students that really need help. We are choosing them together with school's principal. And then since we are 5 years now, we already have one scholar who will graduate this year.
That's amazing.
It is, yeah. The story of that scholar is she has many siblings, so the parents cannot afford send her to school, to college. And then the other one, we actually have two scholars, college scholars. The other one is her mom is a single mom and they're just doing laundry to earn a living. And then actually her mom already got some scars and because of the using the bleach and doing the manual laundry job. Yeah. And I think that's what keeps us going. So even though you can say that there's an AI, I can earn more, there's still people. Actually, I'm being told that should I use AI technology versus humans?
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I agree with that. I actually just today had a talk with Michael Gerber, the author of the book, The E-Myth, which is still on the top bestseller list, I think today. And it was published. It was first published in 1997. They've updated it a couple of times. The last time they updated it was 2009. And it's still on the bestseller list. And we were talking about this, and this was a question somebody asked was about AI. And Michael liked my answer. And my answer was, people have been saying that ever since farmers and tractors came out, they said we wouldn't need farmers anymore. And then when calculators came out, we didn't need accountants and bookkeepers anymore. And then when spreadsheets came, we didn't need finance departments because a sheet would automate everything. So I really think we have to be careful. I do think that AI is a powerful tool, 100%. But I think we all saw when GPT came out, everybody rushed to it and fired lots of staff, and then they hired those staff back.
Yes.
The machine is never accountable. So there has to be a human that is accountable for running the machine. So you might be able to leverage it. And I think if you focus on excellence and how do we be productive, not just integrity and reliability, but if you focus on quality and is this a tool that we can train staff to use, then that's the way forward. It's not about getting rid of people per se and eliminating them, because how many of us hate these big gargantuan companies that we call and we get the automated thing, or like, human, give me a human, like that part.
Yes.
And a lot of those are propped up by governments. If you look at the heart of almost every monopoly, there's legislation in place with some sort of reason why, but there's legislation in place that protects the company that creates the monopoly. And so without those government rules, the monopoly wouldn't exist so much. But my point in all that is that at the end of the day, it's about providing the highest quality products and services we can, being the most excellent at solving the problem people pay us money for. And if that means we have to use a tool, then we use a tool. But, you know, there's, I said this earlier today, I saw last week, my wife is actually just found out she's pregnant, which is nice.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It worked. We decided to start trying again. And I guess first pat on the back there for my super sperm. But I saw a video and there was the moment of conception when the sperm goes into the egg, there's a flash of light that's repeatable, demonstrable, it's observable. Once there's it's conceived, there's a flash of light. The whole thing like glows. There really is a spark of life. That's real. That's not just a phrase that people say, but that's a real thing. When light equals life, when life happens, the sperm and the egg, there's a puff of light, a flash of light. And you know, that light that guides us, unless we all decide to roll over and die, no one is going to want to let the bus drive itself. We're all going to want to steer the bus, and the bus is just a tool. Right? With a vehicle, I can go faster than I could on my feet and I could with a horse. With a train, with an airplane, with a boat, I can go across the water faster than I can swim. I just don't buy that we're all going to be, I think there'll be more abundance, okay? I just think they're tools. That's what I really think. I think there'll be more tools. Just like with calculators and spreadsheets, the non-productive accountants lost their excuse for why they sucked. And the productive ones became more productive. And the non-productive ones had to go get retrained in something else that people wanted so they could have something to offer. And I think that we're just in just cycles of that. So I applaud you on not being too quick to adopt it. My recommendation is to look at it like you would any tool, like a tool that someone uses for social media or a CRM to host. Hey, we're going to use AI because XYZ, but it's not to replace people. It's the focus is on quality and excellence. And I think that'll guide you through. And I want to applaud you on your corporate social responsibility. I think
thank you.
Really commendable. I love it. I love it a lot.
Yeah. It's something that drives us, because there will be times that, you're earning this much, unlike before, this is only what you're getting. However, is that all? Is that only the reason why you are here? Because if it's just material things, I can buy a new bag, and then tomorrow, okay, that's a bag. the joy, it ends there. But then like now, I'm sharing with you, I'm so passionate sharing what we're doing, that we have this 36 girls in the orphanage, and then and somebody also told me, he said, it's a very good, actually, he's a manager in one of our clients' office. He said that it's very good because there are girls, you are not leading them to prostitution or human trafficking, because no gender biases, but they're girls, they're very young. And then, but then you are helping them. So and each time we have clients visiting Philippines in our office, we're bringing them there so that they can see. Actually, the long-term project is, it's like we started with feed them, educate them, shelter them. Because right now, that's the biggest project that we want to work on, is they don't, the shelter that they have right now, it's not really ideal for, it's an old building. And that I mentioned to you, we also have engineers, estimators, and architects. They also help us, maybe because we have same values. They are willing to do the blueprints, the designs, and everything without pay. Yeah. And sometimes they're even asking us, for example, it's Christmas and you want to have some parties for the girls. And they will ask, price I will be asking, is it okay if we also give donations? Yeah, it's open anytime. We can give donations, but we don't force them. And same with the clients. They are not being charged for it. But same values, I think. In any relationship, it will work.
I think that's powerful. And I've done a lot of research. It actually helps you earn more money. It does, because I think either the people want to do business with people that are doing good in the world. People want When I buy a bottle of water, I want to know that I'm planting trees as well. Like that, that's an important thing. And so I just think there's a ton of value in that. And to judge a civilization by how they treat their less fortunate. Nobody asked, but since it's my podcast, I believe in the smallest government possible, while at the same time providing opportunities for the less fortunate. Everyone has a relatively level starting point. I don't think everyone should be equal the whole way through. I believe in a meritocracy. Let the best rise to the top. We need incentives. But I think everybody should have an equal opportunity to get into the race and get trained up to run the race. I think that's that. But once you're in the race, you're in the race. I think that's just how life works. You know,
totally. I agree with you 100% on that, Daryl. I agree too.
This has been a great call. I've got a couple pages of notes here. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
Maybe you can ask me if I will be doing this again in my next lifetime, despite of the challenges, or if ever I will be reborn and if I will be being into business. Because somebody asked me before, it's an all headache. Actually, that's what my husband told me before. He always has aspirin with him when he has the trucking and that trading business or companies. It's a lot of headache. And it's not all walk in the park. And then if it's easy to do business, everyone will do business,
right?
No one will be employees, but it's not that easy. But if you will ask me, if this is the way for me to, if this will give me means to help people, like the money I can help orphanage, scholars, then I will do it again. I will do it again, despite of the challenges, the mistakes, and the humps. I will still do it. If this is what I meant to do and where I should be, then because I cannot help if I don't have the means to do it.
I love it.
Thank you.
If people want to learn more, if they want to get in touch, if they either want to connect over the orphanage or they want to talk to you about BPO services, what are the best ways for them to get in touch?
They can send me an email. I at 24/7 as much as possible. The first time I wake up, I still check my email. So it's just maricar@beyondlimitsbpo.com. Okay. And then also in our website, they can send messages there. I should also be copied when they send messages there.
So the website is beyondlimitsbpo, as in boy peanut butter orange. BEYONDLIM. As in money, ITSBPO, boy peanut orange. I don't know why I remember that, but
yes.
And it's Mari Carr if you want to email her, MARICAR at Beyond Limits BPO, Business Process Outsourcing, beyondlimitsbpo.com. Mari Carr, thank you so much for coming
and
sharing.
Thank you. Thank you. I learned a lot from you too, Daryl. You may never, and you're very, very educational podcast.
Thank you.
I've done podcasts before. It's about sharing how to manage people, but this one is really something different. And I've been listening to your podcast since then. I follow you now in podcast. So every morning after I do my meditation, I listen to your podcast. I make sure before I got busy the day. Yeah. I've been listening actually to 4 or 5 already of your podcast. Educational. I highly recommend it.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, it's been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you for coming and sharing everyone and myself so we can all do better.
Thank you. Continue inspiring people and helping businesses people because, you are really doing a great job. Thank you so much, Daryl. You've been helping a lot. Indirectly, you're helping also our orphanage because of this. Yeah, thank you so much.